Many of you are familiar with AC/DC. In fact, Back in Black, which was released in 1980, for which for some of you might as well be 1880, but it's actually been my ringtone for years. And it's funny, I've made a lot of friends that way. They hear that song like, okay, you're not a normal pastor. Nailed it. AC/DC is actually central to what we're going to talk about today, not the band. I mean, a man in the Forerunners to romp hymns. You know, I just got to draw the line somewhere. We got a picture this magically. Yeah. Yeah, see, they led the way with the whole romp hymn thing. If you've not seen that, don't look that up. It's disturbing. But AC/DC has for actually decades before a band ever picked it up as a name, has referred to the flow of electricity. I'm just curious, how many of you ever been shocked by an outlet or a bare wire or something, got a hold of it? Okay, very good. Keep your hands up. Did you die? No, you didn't. So you're here. So that's actually going to matter here. There was a few years ago that my wife and I were in the airport, actually in Honolulu, and we were sitting there. We got to the gate a little bit early, and there's a native Hawaiian family that's sitting there because we're going to one of the other islands. And they're a young couple, and kind of free-ranging around them is this little guy that's there. He looks to be about like 2 or 3 years old. And so we're just sitting there. And off and on, the dad is kind of fixated on his phone, and the mom's watching him kind of off and on, and the toddler's kind of exploring the area. And I'm watching, as all of a sudden, this little guy zeroes in on this outlet in the wall that's right across from it, and he just heads right towards it. And as I just kind of expect some young 20-something mom is going to like freak out in a panic and like jump up and snatch him up or whatever, but instead, she just sat there. And he gets over that plug, and he gets his finger, and he's just like going at it. And she just kind of looks down at her phone, and this little guy's trying to stick his finger into that little slit. And he's like just trying to dig it in like there's candy in it or something. And she's not, and I'm thinking surely she's going to get him or tell him to stop or jump up or whatever, but she doesn't. So I'm kind of in a dilemma because kind of my protective dad nature is like, okay, I got to jump up, you know, I got to get this little beast before he shocks himself. But his parents are right there. I'm not in, it's a different culture. I mean, here's a native Hawaiian family, so I don't want to cross a line and offend them. So judge me if you will, but I sat there and I just kind of waited for a bright flash and a pop and happened to do CPR on this guy after he gets laid out, but try as he might, he is not getting his pudgy phalanges in that little hole, even though he's working at it as much as he can. And then he finally gives up, and he kind of free ranges back to his parents. I'm like, yay, crisis averted, I can relax. Until he turns around and heads back, it's like a moth to a light, and back he goes at it. And now he's like putting his body weight into it, like this kid is determined to get that in there. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm starting to judge this mom. I'm like, here's this, your small human is about to be vaporized and you're doing nothing. And so, but then I have this moment where I actually flash back to a time when I was like around 5 years old. And I remember this for good reason, but I remember around that time, like back to back, I got shocked pretty quick within a few days. One was actually from an outlet that had gotten wet, and then the other was an empty light socket. I thought it'd be a good idea to stick my finger in there because I was five. And so I did. And the funny thing was is I didn't die. Here I am. But I became wise. And you know how I know that? Because never again did I touch a wet socket or stick my finger into a light socket. In fact, as a side note, if you Google child sticking finger in electrical outlet, you'll find all kinds of articles on why it's bad and dangerous. And yet you find no story at all of a child actually being killed by one, try as you might, because apparently 120 volts just isn't going to get the job done. But it will get their attention. So I went from judging this mom to thinking, what a good mom. Like, this kid is being raised like my generation was, a generation where dashboards were made out of metal and a childhood seatbelt was your mother's arm. You know, where a world where you rode, if you rode your bike with a helmet, your friends would beat you up, you know. You know, a world where you're like, you want to stick your finger in a light socket? Absolutely. Go ahead. Let me get some popcorn. I want to watch this. You know, that was our generation. So then I kind of came back to this moment. I'm like, good parent. You know, let this little man experience a little electrical shock a time or two, and there will not be a third. Good old school parenting. know, so young parents, the lessons is if you want to raise wise sons and daughters with some fortitude, just go home, rid your outlets of all those silly little plastic covers. They're a pain anyways. Your small human will do it once, maybe twice. After that, they will become wise. And now I can be confident none of you will ever have me watch any of your kids or grandkids. So there's a point to me talking about power. And again, as we jump into this, this point that before a band ever took it, AC/DC refers to power flow, the power flow of electricity. And that's what we're going to be talking about. Power is what we're going to talk about for the next 2 weeks, because about half of you, if not more, are actually new to New Life since we launched just over 9 months ago. You've come, you've kept coming. Many of you have invited others who have in turn invited others coming back. And you found that this community is somehow a community that matters to you, and you feel like it adds value to your growth, your pursuit of God. It adds value to your life. You've invited other people that matter to you because you believe it would add value to their life as well, and that is fantastic. But if you don't know what powers us, what drives us, why we exist, what our mission is, why we do what we do, the way we do it, you might end up confused or even critical. Also, if you don't know these things, you won't understand where you fit in, what role you play, and you won't best know how to leverage this community and this movement to be able to further the purposes and mission of God in your life and what we want to accomplish. It's one of the reasons why when you came in on the chair is a kind of a 5x7 blue card, and that gives our vision, mission, values, and if you don't already have those, I want you to take that home. That's a snapshot of who we are and what matters to us. But over the next couple of weeks, over the next few Sundays, I'm going to work to enable you to walk out or log off and have absolute clarity as to what drives us, what powers us, and how it all fits in with what God wants to do in your life and through your life through the lives of others in this world that is broken, and especially here in Wichita. And I'm going to attempt to make it as memorable and portable as I can. That way, you're going to have clarity whether or not this really is a community that you want to be a part of, and if you believe that we can truly and effectively partner with you to reach and connect with the people that God has placed in your life, that he has positioned you to reach in a unique and a special way. So we're going to jump in. We're going to geek out for just a moment. In the world of electrical power, again, there are two primary forms in which electrical power is delivered, AC and DC. AC is alternating current, and DC is direct current. So electricity that's delivered in alternating current, it actually fluctuates in intensity like a wave, periodically going one way. It can reverse, it fluctuates. This would be like the alternator in your car that delivers electricity to the battery as needed based on demand. And it can actually flow back the other way so that your battery doesn't overcharge and explode, which is never a good thing. In direct current, the electricity flows in one direction in a constant at a level amount. This is so devices like laptops or cell phones require a direct current. Some of you may not know this. You'd think you never learned something in a church. That's why this is my laptop cord. That's why you plug this in the wall. This part goes in your computer. With this little fat box right here that's always really irritating, what that does is that levels the current so there's always a constant current to your device so that it doesn't overheat or explode or not get enough electricity and charge or run right. So see, now you can tell your friends you learned something in church. So what jumping in, there's a reason, again, why I'm boring you with all of these details. And that is that it struck me several weeks ago that AC/DC and power, but AC/DC specifically, though it refers to power supply, it also captures New Life Wichita in a very simple and easy to remember way, which I promise you will see that. And I'm going to focus on A and C this week, and I'm going to focus on DC next week. So jumping into this, what powers us first as a community as far as AC, the A is attractional, that we unapologetically will strive to be attractional. So just say that word, attractional. All right, very good. What is attractional? Well, for us, it means that we are going to work to create weekend experiences, that we're going to work to create environments and events and things like that attract, especially a specific category of individual, that together we're going to strive together to attract the D church. That's just a term, basically somebody that grew up in church or was part of a church at one time for whatever reason. They had a painful experience or a negative experience, or they just got caught up in other things and have walked away from the faith, walked away from the church. The unchurched. and the unbeliever, those that just didn't grow up in the faith. They didn't grow up in a community, especially a Jesus community. Maybe they even grew up in another religion. Or the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, people that would identify as no religious affiliation, but they are what individuals might call their seekers or their explorers, that they sense there is something out there and they really would like to discover truth, and especially that they're open to spiritual discussion, especially as it pertains to Jesus and the God of Jesus. We want to attract these individuals. But connected to this, we do also want to attract believers, followers of Jesus. And yes, we want, you know, individuals to come that are believers, that want to grow in spiritual maturity, but that they are also hungry to be a part of the mission that God has called each and every one of us to, individually and as a community. So in other words, we want to strive to partner with you and with God, ultimately together, to reach those that are far from Him. To, as one church coined, to create environments that the unchurched love to attend. And this ranges from the weekend service to the weekend experience, to community groups, to community events, to our partnerships. Like, there were several of you. How many of you participated in the 5K yesterday? All right, so look at that. Great number of you participate in the ICTSOS 5K, you know, the We Be a Community that does that. Or something we're going to be talking about in the coming weeks is we're going to, on this property, we're going to do a community outreach targeted event, a trunk or treat, and really seek to reach into the community around us in the very near future. We unapologetically want to strive to place less priority on ourselves and our own personal preferences and create a community and a movement that is attractive to people that want to explore Jesus and the God of Jesus, that we would create an environment where people can belong before they believe. One of the greatest leaders in the history of the movement of Jesus Christ was a man named Paul. And he played a pivotal role, and he, as far as I'm concerned, resulted in every single one of us that is in the room or watching online. It was his work as he dedicated his life to reaching the non-Jewish, Gentile, pagan, polytheistic world all around the Mediterranean rim, the Arab world around him. And he's planting all these little ecclesias that are Jesus communities throughout. And in one of his letters to a church that he launched in a port city of Corinth, and Corinth was a busy first century city, it was of commerce and wealth. It was about 50 miles west of Athens, Greece. The church was still young and immature. And in this context of this letter, Paul is having to explain what he does, why he does what he does, the way he does it. Kind of like what I'm doing this morning as far as New Life. But he's kind of irritated because the individuals he's writing, they were believers in this young church, which he started. They're kind of sitting in judgment of him. They are questioning him. They're questioning his motives and methods as a leader. And Paul, who has worked at incredible cost to himself, financially, physically, in another part of Scripture, he details the beatings, the stonings, the shipwrecks, the snake bites, the things that he faced to advance and get out the good news, the truth of Jesus Christ. So they're criticizing him. And in this context, listen to how Paul passionately explains himself as he describes his strategy and his motives. And it informs our strategy and motives as a community. He says, though I am free and belong to no one, it's like many of those that have volunteered at New Life to make this happen, free and belong to no one, no one made them do this, I have made myself a slave to everyone. Why, Paul? Why have you made yourself a slave? To win as many as possible. And then he goes into his strategy. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but I am under Christ's law. And what is Christ's law? Sacrificial love. That's Christ's law. So as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak. Why, Paul? Why did you do that? To win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all possible means I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessing. What Paul is saying, he's saying essentially that he is willing to do anything short of sin to reach those far from God. He was determined and committed to choose a means and a strategy as an individual to attract the hearts of everyone and anyone towards Jesus. He was fiercely committed to living and presenting the truth of Jesus in such a way that it was attractive. He was not concerned with keeping all of the believers happy and content. Just read his letters. He wasn't a leader with a primary objective of being a believer pleaser. That was not Paul. Rather, he was living a life of vision and mission, and in order to accomplish it, he passionately worked to become and challenge other believers to become culturally relevant and engaging, so that he and we might work together to impact the lives of other people far from the God of Jesus, with the message of Jesus, people that were very different than from himself, very different. And as a church, we are committed to do the same, and that includes the weekend experience. And again, you actually do need to know this. This might seem academic, but you need to know this because we're talking about a philosophy, a defined philosophy of ministry about the weekend experience. And if you grew up in the church at all, that actually is important to people. And if you're someone who sees a weekend service as something that, if you're a believer, that is devoted and focused entirely on you, and you make the weekend service the only time that you're getting spiritually fed, you are going to become frustrated. And one of the best illustrations, I believe, it, and some of you have heard this, me share this before, but I actually feel like it captures what I'm talking about today. An American friend of mine, this was several years ago, but an American friend of mine had served as a hospital administrator in Haiti for several years, and then he moved back to the States. He fell in love with the people and the culture, and he became fluent in the language and maintained many of his relationships before moving back to the States. And one day I get a call from him that a Haitian friend of his has come over. The guy's like 40 years old, first time ever off the island. And so here he is in America, and he wants to know if my wife and I would host them, and especially him, for dinner. And of course, I say yes, because my love language is food. And then I begin to think of all the things that I and my American friends would love to eat. And I just go ahead and I start thinking of all of these things that I would like, thinking, you know, here's a guy that's grown up in poverty his whole life, and so I want to be lavish with whatever the meal is. And so I begin to suggest all these things to my friend. You know, what do you think I should make? You know, I can make fajitas, I can make tacos, I can make homemade spaghetti, grilled burgers and steak, and all these other things. Again, food that would be my preference and the preference of all of my average American friends, things that we would be hungry for. But he replies, you know what he would really love? He would really love just to have some rice and beans. And it kind of caught me off guard, but he explained to me, this man has grown up his entire life in a culture in Haiti from childhood where nearly every meal involves or is rice and beans. And this is what he's used to. It's food that's familiar to it. He enjoys it. He said, he explained to me that the American foods actually are so rich that he's been unable to actually stomach a lot of it, let alone enjoy it. So consequently, the guy's been really hungry because every American's just trying to, again, like, I want to be generous and create all these great things. And he's not going to be rude and say anything. But he's like, he's ready to go back to Haiti because he's like starving to death. So I'm like, hey, no problem on it. Google is my friend. I Google best Haitian rice and beans. I find this recipe. The evening comes. I prepared this authentic Haitian rice and beans. Our friends show up with this their Haitian friend. There are these greetings. He doesn't speak English, so they're translating back and forth. And so we sit down for this meal, and I'm just telling you, his face lit up when he saw these rice and beans. That was one happy Haitian. And he, at about time, he's, you know, going to dig into the second plate. He says something, and my friend just starts laughing. And I said, "What did he say?" He said, "Your rice and beans are better than his wife's." and then the Haitian got like really serious and said something. My friend laughed again. He said, "If you come see him in Haiti," he says, "you can't tell his wife what he said about her cooking." So again, we're just having a great time together. And the guy ate like three huge platefuls. He's making up for like already 4 days being in the States. And so during the meal, again, we're translating back and forth. We're visiting about our countries and families, what's like in Haiti, what's like in America, all these different things. And then once the main course was done, I got into our freezer because I had purchased about five different containers of five different types of ice cream because, big shock, I love ice cream. And I also thought, he's probably never had ice cream before. And actually, that was true. He had never had ice cream before in his life. And so I love it. And I thought if I make the main course something that he really would enjoy, then I could take the risk and possibly introduce him to ice cream. And so I had vanilla and chocolate and Rocky Road and mint and chocolate chip mint and cherry vanilla. It's a shame that I actually remember all these things, but these are my favorites. just saying. And I bring out all these containers. I'm like showing him the pictures on the container. I ask him if he'd like some ice cream. He's like, yes, please. And I say, well, which one? He said, all of them. And so I just like, so I'm scooped. I get a big old fat bowl. I ask if he'd like some hot fudge because I had hot fudge. He said, yes, please. So I put some hot fudge on. I get everybody's bowls ready to sit down. Now we're chowing down on ice cream. So then we sit down and we're talking, and he's loving ice cream. He is going to town. However, a few bites in, we're all talking and laughing, and I kind of see him reach over, kind of get that jar of hot fudge that I put in the middle of the table, and then he just hoses his ice cream. This guy loves hot fudge, and then he's just getting after it. So later after they're leaving, this man, again, who we've just met, he like bear hugs me, steps back, he puts his hand on my shoulders, and now he starts speaking Creole to me, and my friend's laughing and translating. He says, my new friend, if you come and see me in Haiti, don't tell my wife what I said about her cooking, and bring me hot fudge. And we all laugh, and then we leave. Now, what does that have to do with anything with ACDC church and how we do church and being attractional, everything? Because, see, here's the deal. That night, we were anticipating invited guests. And so we readied our home. We cleaned, we set the table, we prepared the environment from the entryway to the kitchen to the bathrooms, everything for our friends, but especially for our guests. And we wanted him and our friends to feel welcome and wanted, but we especially wanted this Haitian man to feel that way. So we worked to go out of our way to create an attractive, inviting, welcoming environment because we wanted him to not just want to come back, but to want to come back and sit at our table with us. We also wanted our other friends to come back and to know that this was a home where they could invite other people and how they would be treated and that we would make them a priority in the future. And in addition, see, all of us, we needed to eat, okay? We all needed to eat. We needed to eat something that was going to halfway nourish our bodies and that not, didn't just fill us. And I could have decided, you know what? I appreciate my friend's advice, but I'm really hungry for burgers. Or I'm really hungry for fajitas. And who knows? He'll probably like it. In fact, he really should learn to like that or a good steak. But instead, I gave priority to the person that would be my honored guest. I asked questions. I did my homework. And I acted on it, knowing that my guest was coming and just honoring the fact that he's coming from a different culture, a different language, with different values, a different taste, and knowing that he was going to be in my home and that this experience, much of the American experience, was very foreign to him. And so I went out of my way to learn as much as I could about his desires, his tastes, and his needs. And as a result, I was able to create a meal and experience that all of us benefited from, that we were all able to enjoy. We were all filled and satisfied. And because I went out of my way to do that, my friends were also blessed because they wanted their friend to have a good experience. And I went out of my way and Shauna went out of her way to help make that happen. So now that connected us even more because now we're in this together. And blessing him. And he felt valued and regarded and honored as our special guest. In fact, we were just really blessed. Our friends told us after he left, like, that night was the best night of his whole time. And I just, like, was so happy. And so, because he felt valued and honored as our special guest, it was one of his best experiences. And as a result, not only did he enjoy a meal that fulfilled his hunger and his needs, but I got to introduce him to ice cream and hot fudge. And he wanted more. So, for example, when we create the weekend experience, we recognize that every week, along with you that you would say, I'm a believer in, I'm a follower of Jesus, you know, or that I am part of this community, you're insiders, that we're going to have people in this room and watching online that don't necessarily believe what you believe or what many of us believe. We also anticipate that through social media and our website and through promotional efforts that we do from time to time in the community, we're going to have people come in and join us that none of us know. And so they're coming in on their own. In fact, there's one 20-something professional that connected to us simply because he was driving by and he saw one of our banner flags out by the road on a Sunday morning, decided to pull in, check it out, and he's never left. And so we understand, we recognize the need for all of us to be spiritually fed. We're anticipating and prioritizing our guest. And many of these guests are people that you're going to invite, that you are inviting. And so people are going to find us, they're going to come in. And many of them, as it pertains to faith in Jesus Christ and the God of Jesus, they were raised in different cultures, some in America, some overseas, with different language set, meaning maybe, yeah, they don't, it's hard to speak English, but for many, like, they don't, I've talked with many people, they don't have a clue. Old, New Testament, what's that? You know, one's an upgrade, 2.0. You know, if I say Peter, John, these guys, they don't have a clue who these people are. So we speak a different language, and we need to understand that. And they come with different values. So much of this experience is going to be foreign to them. We recognize the need for all of us to be spiritually fed, so to speak, but we will always, always, always prioritize our guests and your guests, people that you're trying to reach out to. We're going to prioritize based on their desires, tastes, and needs. And if we do this well, and every single week we try to learn from the weekend so that we can do the next weekend better, And sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't. We learn more lessons, but if we keep doing that to do it better than the week before, in the end, it will result in all of us being filled and fed wherever someone is on their spiritual journey. If we do it right, our guest, your guest, will experience a community where they walk out of here saying, I don't know that I necessarily believe all they believe, but I can tell I matter to them. That they matter, and that they will feel like this is a place which we do have individuals that are here on a weekly basis because they feel like this is a place where I can explore questions of faith and day-to-day life and the trustworthiness of the message of Jesus and the God that he came to proclaim. They want more of what we have to offer if we do it right, and ultimately what Jesus has to offer. And then we get to introduce them to the spiritual ice cream and hot fudge that is Jesus. And they will want more, but he is the full course meal from beginning to end. So attractional. To paraphrase the words of Paul, that we will become all things to all people so that by all possible means we might save some. We do all this for the sake of the gospel that we may share in its blessings. And one other caveat. When we began New Life Wichita, a big driver and conviction for us was to reach, equip, and empower the next generation. And here's what that means. I'm nearly 50. And what gets my heart beating fast is seeing the next generation engaged and empowered in the church and equipped. See, there are a lot of churches in our community and really all over the United States that are really designed for middle-aged and older. There's far too many churches where I could describe the attitude as this. Next generation, you can have leadership of this church when you can pry it from our cold, dead fingers. And that statement may seem extreme and unloving, but honestly, the truth of it breaks my heart because I've seen it and I've experienced it. And it's often true of older and dying churches, and it breaks my heart more than you know. So I want to say a word to you, especially those of you that are 40 and older, and you're a Christian, and I just need you to hear this, that you are actually an answer to prayer. You're all an answer to prayer. The next generation, you're an answer to prayer. But right now, just for you, they're 40 and over. Some of you are 39, like, yes, this isn't for me. But in the past few weeks, as we've been observing and watching, I stay in the back for worship, and I'm seeing one of the things that we've observed is that we've had a big influx of people with some smoke in their hair, a little silver in their hair. And what you don't know is that many of us have been praying, Father, about half of this city identifies as nuns, N-O-N-E-S, no religious affiliation. And the number is much higher among millennials than the next generation. And what we have prayed is what Jesus told us to pray in Mark 9 and in Luke 10. Send workers. As we look over our city, as we look into our colleges and in this community and into our schools, the harvest and the opportunities are big and ripe. Send us people with life experience and a depth of faith. Also, send us men and women of that stage and age of life that their heart beats for you. God, send us people that they are in some of the highest earning years of their life and afflicted with wealth. Because reaching people far from God, especially young people, which going into college and coming out, they're pretty much broke. And to be able to do the things like what we did in partnering with ICTSOS yesterday and other things that we are going to do in the future, like doing a trunk or treat or other things that requires investment. It requires resources. And so we need men and women of faith and experience and resources. And God has sent you. God has sent you into this community because he wants to do big things, not just in you for your personal benefit, but through you. So for those of you that are 40 and up, I want to invite you to join me to be like Paul. Be willing to do anything short of sin to reach those that are far from God, and especially the next generation. And the majority of the core leadership and the launch team of New Life Wichita are and were under the age of 30. And look what they've been able to accomplish. Imagine what would happen in this city with hundreds more. So here's what that means practically. If we have to make a decision about resources, and one direction leads more towards attracting the next generation, and the other option leads towards attracting the middle age or older generation, the next generation wins. But I'll promise you this. And again, I'm speaking as a man that's closer to 50 than 20. When those of us that are further down the road, when we see the next generation reached and empowered and innovating and doing things with energy and passion, things maybe that we never dreamed of, all of us win. All of us are spiritually fed. And I'll never hear any of you say to me, I just don't feel like I'm being fed, because you will be fed. You will be like Jesus, where there was a moment where he says to his disciples, my food is to do the will of him who sent me. Well, what was the will of him who sent me? Jesus told us. He says, he has sent me to seek and save the lost. So there's a thrill about it, especially when the next generation is reached. And I want all of us to grow old, like really old, and never having to look back thinking, you know what? I wish I would have given more, done more, risked more to reach and empower the next generation. So this is us. This is your children, your grandchildren we want to reach. So ACDC, A is attractional, for the sake of the gospel that we may share in its blessings. Now, I shared the majority of my time. I got like just a couple minutes left. The lion's share was on attractional, because quite honestly, especially if for those of you that grew up in the church or were raised in the church, there can be great confusion about the subject based on how you were raised or what you taught the weekend service was about and what your church experience was to be like. So I'm going to be far quicker into the point on C. So ACDC, A is attractional, C is catalytic. Catalytic means that we have no interest in just attracting thousands of people together to create some great big congregation of thousands so that we can just beat our chest and say, look how big our church is. That is not our interest. It's like, we want to attract people, but we don't want to just attract thousands of people into some, you know, great big Jesus bubble protected from the great big bad outside world and the community. Again, yes, we want to attract people, but then we are to catalyze. As we learned from our most recent series through the book of Jonah, that the key verb, the key primary verb as it pertains to living a life dedicated to Jesus is go. It's go. We're called to go as a community. We exist to be a catalyst, which literally means to cause and accelerate a reaction. That's what a catalyst does in your life and through you in the lives of others. Yes, we want to attract people into this community, this movement, and ultimately into a relationship with Jesus Christ. But at the same time, our mandate is to catalyze people out into the community, out into the communities where God has placed you as a student, a teacher, a worker, a medical professional, an engineer, an attorney, a physician, whatever it is, that environment that you are equipped, it's your community, into those daily environments where God has placed you specifically. So we're to draw in and send out, that when you leave here on a Sunday or after you've watched online, you've had a weekend experience or some other event, that you have been equipped, you've been taught, and you've been prepared to be then sent out, more prepared to fulfill the call that God has in your life and in the relationships that he has put you in, your classrooms, your workplaces. In Matthew 10 and Mark 6 and Luke 9, Jesus sends out the 12, 2 by 2. I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. In Luke 10, Jesus appointed the 72 and sent them out. In John 17, Jesus prays, God, as you sent me, I now send them. I also have sent them. John 20, Jesus said to them, as the Father has sent me, I now send you. In Acts 22, Paul is recounting the call of Jesus on his life. And he says, Jesus said to me, go, for I will send you. far away to the Gentiles. Jesus was always investing in, and sending out. He was a catalyst, and Jesus is the head of this body and the larger community of his followers, the capital C church globally. We are a small C church and community, and our job is not just to collect and gather thousands of followers of Jesus into this building so that we can be about big numbers. That is not what this is about. So I'll put it this way, because military has been such a huge part of my family's heritage, and there's so many times in the Old and the New Testament, life on this earth and spiritual life is described as a battle. I often think in military terms. And so in that world, recruiters recruit men and women. For our purposes this morning, they work to attract thousands of men and women every year. And when somebody signs up, they enlist and they go into strict and intense training to prepare. And throughout one's military career, there's off and on training as you go on and continuous learning. But the key objective is to not gather thousands of men and women into boot camps and classrooms to just teach them stuff. It is to prepare them for something. The objective is to prepare them for something big. As Paul describes in one of the churches, he's describing the church. He says, Christ himself gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors, the teachers. Why? To equip his people for works of service, so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. Speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. And from him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, it grows and builds itself up in love. How? As each part does its work. See, the part of the problem is with huge segments of the American church, it somehow became convinced that if I'm learning stuff, if I show up in church like 80% of the time, drop a few bucks in the bucket, I get super smart, I know all the books of the Bible, I can tell you what the Old and the New Testament is, I've got no doctrine in theology, that somehow that's the goal. But this Jesus has given leadership. Why? To equip his people, and of all the things that he could have filled in the blank with, to equip them to worship, to equip them to speak in tongues, to equip them to stop doing stupid things and don't stick your fingers in light sockets. Of all the things that he could have said, it said to equip his people for works of service. So that is to catalyze you, to get you out, to move you to action, to reach those that are far from Jesus and the God of Jesus, and to encourage and strengthen and care for the believers as well. So in other words, it's our core value, one of our seven core values, which is on that blue card. The church has left the building, that the church is not a building or an institution, it's a movement. That we don't exist for ourselves, we exist for others. So think of New Life kind of like boot camp. Now some of you have been to boot camp, and I think it may be a bad example because I did go to boot camp, and I could not wait to get out of boot camp and never wanted to go back. But a military leader once said, boot camp exists to train 18-year-olds to stop operating exclusively as an individual and operate as part of a larger unit and team to accomplish a mission bigger than themselves. Sound a little bit like the church? It's also to train them to run to the sound of gunfire and perform under fire and the threat of death. It sounds like what the church ought to be. So our strategy, A, to be attractional. For some of you, you've not crossed the line of faith yet, and you keep coming. And that's a win for us, because that means we're creating an environment where you feel like you can come and be valued and matter, and where, as you walk along, that you can deal with the questions, the bigger questions of Jesus and faith, and we're hoping to partner with you. And for those of you that are believers, we are partnering with you to reach the people God has inserted into your daily life with the good news of Jesus Christ, and to train you to stop operating exclusively as an individual and to operate as part of a larger unit and team to accomplish a mission bigger than yourselves. It's part of why we're having tacos and desserts, and especially carrot cake, after this, because we want you to be a part of something bigger than yourselves. Also to train you to run towards gunfire, which for us as a church is basically meaning running towards the personal brokenness in this world and the personal brokenness in the lives of people around you, knowing that there are going to be people that do not share your worldview or our worldview, but they're interested. But as we function as we should, as we attract, equip, and catalyze, and then repeat this over and over again, helping each person to discover what their part is, not doing it alone, we're going to see change in this city. We'll see hope restored, renewed, maybe found for the first time, lives transformed, relationships and redeemed and restored as people discover new life. So A is what? Attractional. C is what? Catalytic. All right. And like alternating currents, sometimes we're going to do things, we'll do a series, like the Who Needs God series that we did. The first two messages in that series, not a single Bible verse. Some of you are like, oh. So here's the thing. Sometimes we're going to do something that is much more attractional. Sometimes we'll do things that are much more catalytic, drawing in, sending out. And my hope is that's what you want. Sometimes we're going to do it really, really well. Sometimes we're not. We're going to learn things. We're going to stumble, but we're going to constantly try to do different things and work to get better. But we're going to live with the tension of being both, because attractional and catalytic, drawing in, sending out, that is who we are. That's wired into our DNA. And my hope is that you want to be a part of something like that, because you know you have a role. And especially for those of you that are students or you're college age or young professional, I hope it excites you to know that there's a movement in a community where you and your peers are very, very important to us. We see incredible potential in you. And we know that if given the opportunity through creativity and innovation, you will do more than we could dream of with the church. And I'm going to close with this. It's my personal belief that, you know, we see the things that are going on in the world, and I'm not just talking like hurricanes and things, so it's been a really bad year for that, obviously, but as I look at world events and as I compare some things that are talked about in Scripture, I feel like in our lifetime that we are going to see dramatic world-altering events happen. And so if there was ever a time to have a strong and equipped church and a strong and equipped next generation, it is now. Pray. Father, you are an awesome God, and I thank you that for whatever reason you have invited us to be a part of the story that you're writing. You have invited us to play a significant role if we're willing. And if we're willing to do that, then you're willing to do your part in partnering with us and writing us in to this thing, this narrative that is leading towards something that, quite honestly, we can't even really get our minds around. But Father, most of us have come to believe that you are a trustworthy Father and that your words are true, that over hundreds and thousands of years, you have been telling many parts of one story, and we get to be a part of it. So Father, I pray that you would make us effective as a community, that you would add to our creativity and our innovation and our willingness to take risk and give and invest, so that we would be positioned to see you do great things through us. And that, Father, that you would make me and the leadership and the rest of us that trust in you to be catalytic in our nature, to effectively send men and women of all ages and stages into their environments where you place them to be effective in helping people discover your love and your offer of grace and redemption. And it's in the name of Jesus that I pray. Amen.